ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ ॐ मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट् अस् बोत् मे ब्रह्मन् bestow upon us both the fruit of knowledge. May we both obtain the energy to acquire knowledge. May what we both study reveal the truth. May we cherish no ill feeling toward each other. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto all. We have been discussing spiritual values. In our last two classes, we discussed a life without values is a valueless life, useless life. Why? Because whatever is not of value doesn't give us any happiness. With this kind of meaning in the mind, there is a problem. In this world, we value so many things, pleasurable things, false friendships, temporary satisfactions. Even these are counterproductive, and taking this particular point, a social psychologist has written a big book. How counterproductive is this kind of attitude, even from a worldly point of view? The title of the book is To Be or To Have. What is it that gives real satisfaction, fulfillment to human beings? When you look around nowadays, what we see is the pursuit of pleasure. This man had studied societies and found out the pursuit of pleasure for itself is completely counterproductive. Too much of happiness is counterproductive. First point. Second point, it is not what we have, but it is what we are. That's what Vedanta is talking about. This man is talking about purely Vedanta. What is it that gives us happiness? Ourselves. Our state of mind. One can have many things and yet be very unhappy. One can have almost nothing and can be very, very happy. Anyway, what I wanted to tell is that a life without values is a valueless life, because when we pursue certain values, what really happens is that our state of consciousness, or what Swami Vivekananda calls manifestation of divinity, takes place. And divinity is what gives us meaning to our life, happiness, fulfillment, satisfaction, whatever name you wish to call. Sometimes words can confuse us, or rather most of the time words confuse us. Samadhi, ask somebody, do you wish to practice samadhi? Immediate answer would, oh, that is for specialized monks. We are householders. We don't want samadhi. What is samadhi? Intense, unbroken happiness is samadhi. Who doesn't want it? A value must fulfill certain criteria. What is that criteria? First of all, it is something which is not acquired, which is yet to be acquired, and which can be acquired only through effort. Second, it is always upward. Thirdly, lastly, it must always be rooted in God. Any value that is not rooted in God ultimately leads to failure, disappointment. Greatest example, in the modern age, you know, in last century, when science was progressing, there were some foolish people who thought, if we pursue scientific truth, it will solve all problems. In fact, it led to the greatest disaster, leading to two world wars, where more than 100 million people were butchered, not to speak of the side effects that have happened to millions of others. At that time, there must be something in place of religion. So they have invented a fancy word as a value. It was called spiritual humanism.
It has nothing to do with spirituality. Humanism. Humanism means you are a human being, and therefore we must observe certain rules and regulations with regard to each other, so that I can be happy, you can be happy. We must position ourselves in such a way, I should be able to scratch your back, you should be able to scratch my back. But it didn't work. It didn't work because it's human nature, at what we call Maya, consists of what the Western terminology calls, Christianity calls, seven deadly sins. Even from the economical point of view, 2-3 years back, the economic situation has gone down. Do you know why it has gone down? It's only greed. And greed is one of the seven deadly sins. Even from the viewpoint of ordinary human life, these things are very dangerous. They are deadly. They are called mortal sins. And Christianity agrees, when a person commits a mortal sin, and sin, they have divided into two categories, venial sin and mortal sin. Venial sin means small. I became a little bit less careful and I'm a diabetic patient. I ate one sweet. It's venial sin. So the parihara, what is the remedy? You take your insulin, double dose. It's fine. So what is it? A venial sin is a sin which can easily be remedied. Moreover, it doesn't alter the consciousness, what we call impressions. Whereas a mortal sin, it burns our inside. It alters our state of consciousness. So Vedanta is a most marvelous psychology. Vedanta tells, if you can modify your mind in such a way, and values are what modifies the mind, all that we require, we get. I will come back in today's talk to that point. All that we wish, we can get. One important and very interesting point which I will discuss right here is, you know, in this world, we all desire so many things. And we also know at the same time, if we don't work hard to get them, it's impossible to get them. First, we have innumerable desires, and these desires cannot be fulfilled unless we pay for them, we work out for them, right? Patanjali Yogi tells that without doing the least bit of work, effort, you don't need to lift even one blade of grass. You will get all that you want by just being virtuous and good, observing certain values in life. This may appear a little bit paradoxical, but it dispels two misunderstandings. Rather, it dispels one misunderstanding and strengthens one Vedantic teaching. What is the misunderstanding? The first misunderstanding is that we cannot have happiness or unhappiness by ourselves. All happiness or unhappiness comes from outside. You want to eat, enjoy something nice. So you eat something very nice, pleasure comes. You eat something poisonous, then unhappiness comes. So this happiness and unhappiness depends upon what? An outside object, a good thing and a bad thing. Right? This is the one misnomer. What Vedanta tells is, happiness and unhappiness comes from within ourselves. It strengthens this idea, happiness and unhappiness are not outside. Doesn't depend on any external object. Solely depends upon our condition of the mind. If the mind stands between us and the self, then we become unhappy. When the mind becomes transparent, allowing the light of the Atman to manifest, then we become happy. Sat means good health, good life. Chit, knowledge, intelligence, awareness, ananda, unbroken bliss. They belong to whom? To the self. They are the very nature of the self. They are not even properties of the self. They are not qualities of the self. They are the very constituents of the self. So we don't need to depend upon. I won't go into the subject. Then what is the relationship between outside objects and the self? I will not go into that subject. But what is important is that we can just sit and pray to God, practice virtues, and both are equal. When you close your eyes, you are praying to God. When you open your eyes, you are serving God, interacting with God. This is called spiritual life. In which case, without doing anything, you will get all the happiness in the world. But of that, a little bit later. So, it is discussed. A value is a most wonderful thing. Without value, even from a spiritual point of view, even from a worldly point of view, value is what makes life meaningful. And what makes life worth living is meaning. It is said that of all the creatures on earth, human beings are the only creatures who cannot live without seeking meaning of life. We are meaning-seeking creatures on earth. We don't know about animals, but definitely about human beings. If there is no meaning, then we may live, but it will be a deadly life, living dead life. So with this introduction, I will start first from Indian concept of values. I already had discussed to some extent. Indian philosophy is a philosophy of values. Means, what are values? What is the good? What is the result if you practice them? And how to practice them? So, last class I had discussed. We all know, we are all familiar with Purushartha. According to Hindus, what are they? Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. I also had told in last class that these values, why are they called values? The English word values doesn't give that much of meaning. They are called Purusha Artha, means they can be obtained only by human beings who put forth consciously making them as goal and consciously pursuing them until they are achieved. That is why they are called Purusha Artha. They just won't come naturally. Won't they come? Has not an animal a natural desire to be happy? Yes, it is. But it doesn't know that I have to make the goal as I want to be happy. I want to make it the goal of my life intentionally with full consciousness, awareness. And then make it a goal means seek a path. After seeking a path, put forth all the effort that one can. It doesn't seem to happen in the life of animals. Mostly it seems to be happening in the form of instinct. And most of us, we are only at the instinct level, not at the conscious level. Whatever we do, we seem to be doing it in a, what is called, today I live. This is the necessary today. This is what I will do today. Tomorrow will take care of, tomorrow will take care of tomorrow. There is only one being who can say tomorrow will take care of tomorrow. And that being is a realized soul. Because God will take care of that person. But if we don't plan for tomorrow, then we lose a lot of things. Okay. So, Purusharthas are four. Of these values, divided into two categories. Instrumental value and intrinsic value. What is that value which is intrinsic? Means which doesn't need any further development. It is itself sufficient unto itself. What is that value? Liberation. Moksha. And why do we want liberation? Because we are suffering. The body has its own suffering. The mind has its own suffering. And our spiritual nature, if it is not manifested, then it will suffer. Unfulfillment. You know, in modern language, we use a slightly different word. Ask somebody, are you happy in your job? Not so happy. What is the cause? Well, it is boring. What do you mean by it is boring? It is not challenging. Do you understand what is the meaning of challenge? That means, I have tremendous intelligence. I have the capacity, but this capacity is not being utilized, not being manifested. I don't have the opportunity to manifest. In the same way, there is a spiritual nature which wants to be manifest. In a very narrow sense, it gets manifested in the family values. A husband, a wife, children. Husband loves wife and children. Wife loves husband and children. The children love the parents. Love is the intrinsic nature of the self. But this particular love manifests in a very, very small way. So, Purushartha. In Indian philosophy, this particular topic we are discussing, that purusharthas are values, Indian concept of values, have got to be practiced in a systematic way. So they call it tattva, purushartha and hita. Tattva means what is the meaning of life, what is the goal of life. What is the goal of life? Purushartha. Purushartha means you will have to finally liberate yourself from the clutches of limitations, maya, avidya, ignorance. And what should you do? There is a particular path you have to take to reach that goal. And what is that particular way? It is called yoga. Yoga means what? That which joins us with our goal. That is called yoga. Now, interestingly, we all know there are four yogas. Bhakti yoga, karma yoga, raja yoga, jnana yoga. The goal of the yoga is only one. The goal is not four. The goal is only one. To reach that ultimate purushartha called moksha, liberation. But the paths, are they different? We think the paths are different? No, paths are not different. There is only one path. What is the difference? The faculty, that is the difference. Four different drivers, driving four different vehicles to reach the same destination. You see, some people have restless nature. So, who is the driver? Karma. Make the driver a little bit educated. Then he becomes what? Nishkama Karma Yogi. Some people have emotions. Who is the driver? Emotion. So, make emotion the driver, but purify it before. So, what does emotion become? Devotion. Then, there is intellect. Intellect is the driver. So, make the intellect the driver after purifying it. What does the intellect do? Instead of pursuing useless goals, it will pursue true knowledge, jnana, the path of knowledge. Then there is another faculty, which is called will. If will is not purified and controlled, what does it become? What does it turn into? Willfulness. What is willfulness? Do whatever you like. There is no goal. Do whatever you like. And if you go, do whatever you like, so you reach also nowhere. There was a fellow who used to thieve. So he was caught, brought before the magistrate. Magistrate asked him, where do you live? He said, here and there. What do you do? This and that. The judge got so angry. He said, put this fellow in the jail. As he was being led away, he was asking, when am I going to be released? The judge said, sooner or later. Willfulness will not do. Will means it has to be directed towards a particular goal. We all have will, but unfortunately it is scattered. Sri Ramakrishna puts it in a beautiful way. Our will is like a packet of mustard seeds. Once the packet breaks, what happens to the mustard seeds? They all fall down. After that, to gather them is very difficult. So if the will is the master, purify it means that first of all, make it strong, then direct it towards one goal. That is called Raja Yoga or Dhyana Yoga. Now I said, there are no four different paths, only four different drivers. Why did I say that? Everywhere you hear, four different paths. No, there are no four different paths. You see, if suppose there is a building, very tall building, 100-storied building, and there are four staircases leading to the roof. And four different people take four different staircases. The goal is to reach the roof. So you can say they are traveling by four different staircases. So are they traveling by four different paths? In a way of speaking, yes. In a way of speaking, no, because all of them have to transcend in the second floor, third floor. Is it not? Will one staircase simply jump up and go to the roof? All of them have to transcend slowly, gradually, each floor, leave it behind and ultimately reach. What are we talking about? If we want to go to our destination, which is called moksha or self-knowledge, then the experiences necessarily we have to transcend exactly the same. So what are those floors we have to descend or ascend or give up? go beyond, you know. Only in this case, in a way of speaking, it is called three-storied building. What are the three stories? Yes, that is one way of putting it. Sthula sharir, gross body, subtle body, causal body. You take any path of yoga, it doesn't matter. You have to get out of this body identity. You have to get out of the mind identity. You have to get out of the identity of the causal body. Then only you reach the fourth or ultimate, which is called Turiya. There is no other way. Whichever path you take, because I am a bhakt, I am a devotee, I will be intensely clinging to the body. That doesn't work. So what is bondage? Bondage is to be identified with the three bodies. Gross body, then subtle body, then the causal body. What is spiritual progress? Gradually you detach yourself from these three. That is the goal of yoga. And all these are connected with one single instrument. What is that instrument? It is called chitta. The function of the chitta is memory. What is the memory? The memory says, I am the body. Okay, you are not the body. The memory says, I am the mind. Okay, you are not the mind. Memory says, I am the causal body. No, no, you are not the causal body. What am I? You are the Brahma. Aham Tattvam Asi Aham Brahmasmi. We have to transcend these three stories. This is the simple truth. Whatever path you take, Bhakti Yoga or Karma Yoga or Raja Yoga or Jnana Yoga. So that is the goal. For spiritual values, what is spiritual value? A spiritual aspirant has only one goal. How to attain to his true nature, self-knowledge. For that he must have some spiritual goals. But he has to use this very vehicle. What are those vehicles? Body and mind. Are these three bodies? Put shortly, body and mind. These are the instruments. Does a Raja Yoga, Raja Yogi has separate instruments other than body and mind? Does a Jnana Yogi has a separate instruments other than body and mind? Does a devotee has separate instruments other than body and mind? All of us have whatever faculty we are using. We only use body and mind, purify them in our own way and direct them towards God or merge them in God. That is called transcending body-mind duality. With this background, let us come. Our Upanishads. The very word Upanishad means that which destroys our attachment or our ignorance, that which makes us reach our true nature, Brahman. That is the meaning of the word Upanishad. Upanishad is also called Vedanta. So, if we want to be spiritual aspirants, and not necessarily Hindus, whether you are a Hindu or Christian or anybody else, spiritual aspirant is a spiritual aspirant. There is no Hindu spiritual aspirant or Christian spiritual aspirant. Spiritual aspirant is a spiritual aspirant. So, we study Upanishads. And before studying the Upanishads, we have to be prepared to study the Upanishads. We must acquire certain qualifications even for the study of the Upanishads. I am not talking about studying the textbook. When the Upanishad says, are you qualified to study me? They are not asking, can you not buy a book? Upanishads by Swami Nikhilananda. Can you not buy them? Is it too difficult? That's not the qualification. Can you not read them? Yes, I know English language very well, or Sanskrit language. I can read. So, can you not sit and study? Yes, I can study. That is not the point. Can you understand them? Understanding means here knowledge. We are talking about knowledge. To have proper knowledge, we need preparatory knowledge. That is what is called qualifications. So, with this background, what the Upanishads do, that they emphasize that you must have these kind of qualifications before you enter or you become fit to study Vedanta. But is it possible to acquire those qualifications through human effort? Yes, to some extent, yes. But it is mainly two points where the Upanishads takes pain to make clear. Two points. What is that? Self-effort and grace of God. Without the grace of God, it is not possible to acquire that qualifications. Very, absolutely very clear about that. That is why Sri Ramakrishna's most famous prayer, you know, Christ's prayer, Our Father who art in heaven, is the most precious prayer for Christians. And there is a most precious prayer for Ramakrishna, when somebody was asked, you know, one of our Swamis, are you a Christian? He said, no, I am Ramakrishna. See, Ramakrishna also had given us a most beautiful prayer, if you remember it. What is that? Oh mother, here is your dharma, here is your adharma. So take them both and grant me pure love to thy lotus feet. This is a very meaningful prayer to us, because Sri Ramakrishna is not telling that I can acquire love for you all by myself. I will lead a very virtuous life. I will do my level best to lead a good life, and I will acquire devotion. Sri Ramakrishna said, no, unless God gives you, you cannot love him. If you say Ramakrishna was a devotee, so he was saying like this. But a jnani like Shankaracharya will not say like that. Huh? What is Shankaracharya saying in his Viveka Chudamani? Durlabham trayamevaita daivanugraha hetukam manushyatvam mumukshutvam mahapurusha samshaya. Very beautiful verse. What is he saying? Three things are impossible to obtain excepting through the grace of God. What are those three things? A human birth, and a desire for liberation, and the company of the holy. Now simply you can't say, I would like to be a spiritual aspirant. Only when God's grace is there, that desire will come in you. Otherwise it will disappear. And then the opportunity to have the real company of holy people. Satsanga. It is such a of incalculable value. We can never put a price on what is called the value of the company of a holy man. There was a beautiful story with regard to this. As Buddha was living in one city, I forget the name, and there was a public woman, Ambapali, and she developed devotion to Buddha. She was a public woman. She earns her money by selling her body. Remember this. So she thought, I must entertain Buddha. So early in the morning, before any of the Babus got up, she went and fell at the feet of Buddha and said, Lord, would you accept bhiksha in my house today? He consented by his silence. He did not say yes, but he meant yes. She was so happy. She became tall, as it were, 50 feet tall. You know, that happiness. And she was very rich. She was driving back. By the time the Babus got up, then they wanted to invite Buddha. And when they were going, they saw this Ambapali was driving back and her face was shining. Then they asked, where had you been? I went to the Blessed One. What did you do? I invited him for lunch. Has he consented? Yes, very, very graciously he consented. But we want to invite him. No, sorry, you can't, because I have invited. We will give you so much money. They were prepared to give so much of wealth. She said, what, I myself have got a lot of it. What am I going to do? This opportunity of serving the Blessed One will not be available. It is not for sale. Nachiketa, he says, na ittena tarpaniyo manushyaha. Man cannot be satisfied by, a spiritual aspirant cannot be satisfied by any amount of wealth. You know, Yamadharmaraja offered all the happiness that could be obtained in heaven by a human being, simply rejected like a straw. Why? Because he understood. Nachiketa was clearly telling, we are so fortunate to get a teacher like you, and this opportunity cannot be made to lose. There was a great pandit, it was called Narayana. He came to Sri Ramakrishna. He was a married man, such a great scholar. The Raja Bardwan offered him, you know, his what is called chief scholar in his court, and he rejected and said, no, I am still a student. Then he came to Sri Ramakrishna, saw that whatever he studied in his Vedanta of 12 years, here this man, has unlettered man, he realized in his life. He said, where else shall I get this blessed opportunity. Then you know what happened? He refused to go home to his wife and relatives. Then they were coming. They said they wrote, fortunately they wrote a letter informing him, we are coming, we will bring you back home. He fell at the feet of Sri Ramakrishna and said, if I don't realize God in this life after seeing you, my life is in vain. Will you please give me monastic vows? And he was Narayan Pandit. He was the only man to whom Sri Ramakrishna with his own holy hands had given complete sannyasa. Not even to his direct disciples, only. So what a great good fortune this Narayana Pandit had realized the value of the company of Sri Ramakrishna. By whose grace? We don't know. He was only known that much, then he left, and then nobody had ever seen him. So, what a blessed opportunity this is to be in the company of Swami Vivekananda or Swami Brahmananda. By whose grace? Another incident comes to my mind. You know, everybody thought Sri Ramakrishna was mad. Then they complained to Madhur Babu. And one day Madhur Babu came secretly and started observing Sri Ramakrishna's mode of worship. You know the story? What happened? He observed. Then he found Sri Ramakrishna was in an exalted state, Raga Bhakti. Then he went back silently, wrote to the priests, let Bhattacharya do whatever he likes. Do not disturb him. Now, Sharadananda remarks in the Great Master, how did Madhur Babu come to know? Was he such a great spiritual soul? No. How did he come to know? Because Mother had graciously allowed him to understand. She lifted his mind to such an extent, just to make him understand, this is not a mad cap. This is an highly exalted soul. If the Mother doesn't make any one of us understand, it is not possible. Another example, in the Gospel, Sri Ramakrishna and M were talking, and M, the topic was how to meditate. Then in that context, Sri Ramakrishna was telling, you cannot meditate upon God unless God permits you to meditate upon Him. This is the teaching of Sri Ramakrishna. Pray to the Mother that may she not tempt you. Only two prayers, put negative way in one way and positive way in another way. You know, Narada, Bhagavan Narayana was very pleased with Narada. Ask a boon of me. What did he ask? He said, that pure, unmotivated love for thy lotus feet. And what was the other thing he asked? May Mahamaya never tempt me. You see, even Gnan is, if Mother is not gracious, they will just, you know, fellow who doesn't know how to swim, when he falls into water, what does he do? Go down and come up, go down and come up. So this whole world is like that ocean. We are all there. Unless Mother kindly lifts us up, it is not possible to pray to God. Not possible to have a spiritual desire. It's not possible to have any satsang. Because how will you recognize? You will simply run to some stupid fellow thinking he's a great fellow. So many people, you know, they claim themselves as spiritual people. If you are not, if God is not gracious to you, He will send you to that fellow. Then you become very holy. The Upanishads know that without the grace of Atman, no one can even turn their face towards Atman. So two prayers in the form of Shanti mantras are being uttered. The first one goes like this. Om Apyayantu Mama Angani Vak Pranas Chakshu Shrotramatho Balamindriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahma Upanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Ma Brahma Nirakaraut Anirakaranamastu Anirakaranam Meyastu Tadatmani Nirate Yavu Upanishatsu Dharmaha Temayi Santu Temayi Santu Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Meaning, may my limbs, speech, prana, eye, ear, and power of all my senses grow vigorous. All is the pure Brahman of the Upanishads. May I never deny that Brahman. May that Brahman never desert me. Let that relationship endure. Let the virtues mentioned in the Upanishads be rooted in me. May they repose in me. Om, peace, peace, peace. The aspirant realizes that unless the body is healthy, unless the mind is healthy, it's not possible to progress, to be happy in any life. So it is said, a human being lives in three states at any given time. Yoga, bhoga and roga. If he is not in yoga and bhoga, in what state is he? In roga. So even to enjoy the world or to progress in spiritual life, we need strong body and healthy body, strong mind and healthy mind. This combination, some people's body is very strong and healthy, but they are devoting themselves to world life. Some people's mind is very strong, strong will, but they are running in the wrong direction. Some people's mind is very healthy, but they unfortunately they turn out to be goody-goody fellows. Very good, but there is no strength in that mind. All these wily fellows, you know, politicians especially, they're very strong-minded fellows. I admire them. I would like to imitate them in some respects. You know what is that respect? You throw any amount of dirt on them, they are not bothered. You criticize them, try to pull them down, pull out your gun. You know how many attempts will be made on their lives? But they don't even worry. They go to bed nicely, they go to bed. But let somebody tell a wrong word intentionally or unintentionally, what happens to you? For 30 days, you won't sleep. What kind of mind is that? What is important is, here, the goal is mentioned, hita. What is that? All is the pure Brahman of the Upanishads. It is mentioned in the Ishavasya Upanishad, very first verse. All that we see is nothing but Brahman, Ishvara, Ishavasyam, Idagum, Sarvam, Et Kincha, Jagatyam, Jagat. Okay. May I never deny that Brahman? What is our problem? First of all, we don't know it is God. Secondly, we actively deny. May I never deny. And may Brahman never desert me. Does Brahman ever desert us? It is not possible. Brahman has limitations. Many people don't know, I am telling you. God has many limitations. He can't go on a holiday. It's a big limitation. Second limitation, if he gets angry with you, he can't turn away his face. He can't avoid seeing your face. Let him try. So, Brahman will never delay. But in the sense, if I deny God, then as though God also has denied me. If I go away from you, as though you also have gone away from me. That is the idea it is given. There is a very interesting incident, you know. Sri Ramakrishna's life is so fascinating if you only know how to study it. There was one character, peculiar character called Haladhari. Somewhat learned man, but great hypocrite. So, he never understood Sri Ramakrishna properly. But sometimes Sri Ramakrishna would climb on him when he was in an ecstatic state. Immediately that man's character changes. Oh Ramakrishna, I understood you. You are the Parabrahman. And Sri Ramakrishna would say, take care that you don't deny me. As soon as he comes down, his knowledge also disappears. Then he will say, you fool, what are you doing? Just now you said that I am the Parabrahman. No, I was a fool to tell like that. Next time, again when Sri Ramakrishna climbs, he will say, oh Ramakrishna, you are the source of everything. Now I have realized, I will never again deny you. Yeah. After a few minutes, when Sri Ramakrishna's touch is gone, again, Punar Mushiko Bhava, be the same old mouse that you were. So this play went on for a long time. Why did that happen? Because God did not bless him at that moment with his grace. He said, you remain a fool. It is the Divine Mother's will that one becomes a fool, one also becomes a learned gnani. Kare dahuma brahmapado kare koroma athogami. This great Totapuri, he lost all his Brahma knowledge, got very angry. And this foolish Kalidasa, you know, before he became Kalidasa, he was a most foolish fellow. He was cutting the branch on which he was sitting. What did he become? By the mother's grace, the world's greatest poet or writer, even today, unparalleled his poetry. All by the grace of mother. Then, there are a lot of incidents come to my mind by the grace of God. What is the point? The point is we have to be humble. We have to pray to God, O Mother, O Lord, bestow your grace so that I can accept you. Humble attitude. That's what is important. This is the first prayer. Then there is even more beautiful, very concrete. These are called peace chants, shanti mantras. Om Bhadram Karnebhi Shrunayama Devaha Bhadram Pashye Makshavir Yajatra Sthirai Angaihi Tustu Vagam Sastanovi Vyashema Devahitam Yadayuhu Swastina Indro Vridhashravaha Swastina Pusha Vishwavedaha Swastina Starkshu Arishtanemihi Swastino Brihaspatir Dadhatu. Meaning, Om, O worshipful ones, gods, may our ears hear what is good and auspicious. May we see what is auspicious. May we sing your praise, living our allotted span of life in perfect health and strength. May Indra, who is extolled in the scriptures, Pushan, the all-knowing, Tharkshya, who saves us all from harm, and Brihaspati, who protects our spiritual lustre, vouchsafe prosperity in our study of the scriptures and practice of the truths contained therein. Peace, peace, peace. This is a very important Shanti Mantra. What is the meaning of it? Meaning it, there are three important prayers are contained. What is our the purpose of life? What is the purpose of life? Why are we given this life? Only one purpose. What is it? Worshipping God. As long as we live, and we live as long as you have allotted our lives, may we spend that life in worshipping you, O gods. It's a prayer. May we never forget that this is the purpose of our life. Then, how to continue this? How to put it into practice? Bhadram karnebhi shrunuyamadi. May we hear what is auspicious. May we see what is auspicious. Most beautiful, meaningful Shanti Mantra. May we hear what is auspicious. What is it auspicious thing? Whatever takes us to God, that is auspicious. I'm sometimes putting it in a funny language. Suppose your wife gets very angry and says, get out. Is it an auspicious word or not? You know, if you go to a wrong place, it is a very inauspicious word. But if straight away you come to Vedanta Center, what a blessed thing it is. That is called auspicious words. Tulasidas, how did he become? Because of his wife. How did Biloba Mangala change? Because of his wife. So, difficulties, suffering in life can bring us. If somebody is abusing us, it can turn out to be very, very auspicious thing. We don't know. It depends upon how God allows us to turn our direction. That is very important. Now the real meaning, this is only our interpretation. What is the real meaning? The Upanishads are clearly telling. Isavasya Upanishad, for example. What does it say? The whole Isavasya Upanishad, even though containing 18 mantras, the very first mantra is the very essence of Isavasya Upanishad. What does it say? This whole universe that we are experiencing is nothing but God. What are we seeing? God. What are we listening? God. What are we smelling? God. What are we tasting? God. What are we touching? God. Live with this knowledge. And if you cannot live with this knowledge, you do certain actions, rituals. Gradually, the goal is through those actions, you come to this life. And if you do not come to this life, to this understanding, you are called a demon. Asurya nama te loka andhena tamasavritaha thamste pretyabhigacchanti ekecha atmahanojana. Those who kill their own self. How does one kills one's own self? Not by committing suicide, but by denying one's own nature, true nature, and assuming a false nature. Such people, they are steeped in blinding darkness, and they are called demons, asuras. The opposite are called suras, devas. Anyway, the point is, this is what the whole universe is nothing but God. That means, may we have that common sense to see that what we are hearing is God. What we are seeing is God. But in our ignorance, we interpret what we hear and see as something other than God, though it is nothing but God. So the prayer is, may we progress in such a way that whatever words come, they are only Veda mantras. Whatever sights we behold, they are nothing but God playing in this world. Everything is a play of God, Leela of God. Now that's very interesting concept. Hindus have this beautiful concept. The whole world is a playground of the divine, Krishna Leela, Leela Tarangini, Leela Amritam, we call it, Sri Ramakrishna Leela Amritam. The whole life of Sri Ramakrishna is a divine play. Now in the divine play, not everything appears to be positive. There is negative. Somebody is killing somebody. That is also play. Somebody is steeped in worldliness. That is also play. Somebody is doing great austerities. That is also a play. Everything is a play. So whatever we hear, that is nothing but if we know how to make it auspicious. What is it? If somebody praises us, somebody praised Sri Ramakrishna. What did he say? Gospel. Say, don't thank me. Thank the Divine Mother, because it's coming from her. Somebody had heard Sri Ramakrishna singing so beautifully. Who was singing? It is the Divine Mother who was singing. So whatever Sri Ramakrishna did, who did it? He never said, I did it. You never come across Sri Ramakrishna saying, I did this, I did that. Always he said, it is the Mother. In our case also, that is the truth. Only thing is, we are unnecessarily taking the, what is called, credit for that. And if you take credit, the economic situation will go down. That's what happens. It means you will suffer. That's what happens. So what is spiritual practice? Whatever path we take, spiritual practice has only one aim. What is that? This false ego must disappear and the real ego must manifest. Worldly ego must be destroyed and spiritual ego must become manifest. They are not two egos, but there is a dross of worldliness on the pure ego and you wash it off. This prayer is telling, first of all, without your grace, we cannot hear what is auspicious. That is the first meaning. The second meaning is, may we have that intelligence, whatever we hear, may we make it very auspicious. May we take it in the good light, positive light. See, only God is telling me something. Somebody scolds you. It pains an ordinary person. But you take it. God is scolding me. Why is he scolding me? Because he wants me to learn some good lesson. See what is good. You can see many bad things. Seeing good or bad depends upon us. This is another important psychological law. There may be something happening there. I will give you one real example and also one small instance Swami Vivekananda had quoted in his teachings. One Sri Ramakrishna was going to Calcutta and he saw a public woman standing. What did he see? Mother Sita waiting for Rama. This lady is waiting for customers. From whose point? From our point. Now, you may say, he is an exceptional case. That is not right. She is a public woman. She is waiting for customers. That is the truth. Is that the truth? Who is that woman? God. And for whom is she waiting? For God. God is waiting for God. Is it not? That is the truth. What we see is our limited, through our ignorance we see, we misinterpret. Whatever Sri Ramakrishna saw, he saw only God. He said once, two instances he was telling. There was one, Hajra. One day he disturbed Sri Ramakrishna and he got very annoyed. And then he said, what can the poor fellow do? The mother hasn't given him the right understanding. See how wonderful it is. A second instance, one mad monk, wandering man, came to Dakshineswar. Even the beggars did not allow him to sit with them. So this man, after eating, he went to the temple, stood, and then started praising a hymn, the Divine Mother. Sri Ramakrishna said, I saw the whole temple vibrating with tremendous power. You see, here when the earth shakes, we notice. But here, who notices that when a devotee is really, really devoted and praising the Divine Mother, the Mother is smiling, Mother is pleased, Mother is moving. Do we see that vibration? We don't see because we don't have the eyes to see. Whereas Sri Ramakrishna saw the whole temple was vibrating with violence, violent power, because of the power of the man. Such was, he could move the whole temple. But in Sri Ramakrishna's eyes, he was not a madcap. He was a realized soul. Where is our vision and where is his vision? And one day, he saw a dog mating with a bitch. What did he see? He saw Lord Shiva sporting with the Divine Mother. In reality, male and female, what are they? Nothing but the sport of the Divine, Purusha and Prakriti. That is why Hindus worship Shiva, and when we say they worship Shiva Linga, always there is another symbol also. What is that symbol? Yoni we call it. But these stupid people, oh, Hindus worship phallus and generative organs. But what? Hindus are so foolish to worship? What are they really worshipping? This is a symbolism saying this whole universe, our life is nothing but a play of the, in tantric language it's called chit shakti. Chit and shakti, they combine, unify Purusha and Prakriti. That is why wherever there is Shiva, there is Shakti. Wherever there is Shakti, there is also Shiva. Unable to understand this symbolism, people say so many things. You know, Hindu gods and goddesses. I also explained during one of my classes the symbolism of Mother Kali. She is standing on Lord Shiva. Sometimes I made fun also. You know, the first feminine movement started in India so many thousands of years back. But the real fact is, what is it signifying? Shiva and Shakti. Mahakala and Kali. The eternal and the temporal. This world is nothing but a play of the eternal and the temporal. Symbolism. How can we see it? Only through the grace of God. That is why the prayer is, may we start seeing good everywhere. Whatever incident, see the positive side of it. Whatever we hear, see the positive side of it. If you purify your eyes, your ears, then whatever you see and hear becomes Vedavakya. This is the simple truth. That is why in India, North India, there is a tradition. When two wandering monks meet, you know how do they greet? Not like the psychiatrists in New York. When two psychiatrists in New York meet each other, you know how do they greet? You are fine, how am I? When two wandering monks meet, do you know how they greet each other? Darshan saaf hai. Is your vision clear? Means are you able to see God everywhere? And when he goes for begging, what does he say? He stands at every household and say, Bhagavati Bhiksham Dehi, Mother, please give me alms. Who is it that feeds us? There is only one. It is the Divine Mother. This is what we are praying. What for? So that I can have good eyes, I can have good ears, not 20-20. This is spiritual vision. Spirituality is nothing but we will have the same body, the same mind. But we will have whatever we see, whatever we interpret is only good. Spiritual interpretation. That is all. That is the change. As Holy Mother says, two horns don't grow because we grow in spirituality. What do we grow then? Viveka. Holy Mother used the word Viveka. Not to be understood in the sense of Gnanis, Viveka, there Viveka means discrimination between the real and the unreal. In a way it is also right, but what she really means is, when a person grows spiritually, he sees only God, nothing but God. Whatever word he hears, it is God's word. Whatever he sees, it is God. Whatever he smells, that is only God. Whatever he tastes, that is prasadam. And whatever he touches, that is only God. This is a wonderful, wonderful truth. There is a lot of explanation to be given to this, but I won't go. Otherwise, our spiritual value will go down. But very briefly, I will give you a hint. Our life is possible because of five elements. What are those five elements? Space, the air, fire, water, and earth. And all these five elements have one predominant quality, what we call Shabda, Sparsha, Rupa, Rasa, Gandha. The sound, the sight, the taste, the touch, the smell, power. All the five elements have a dominant quality. What this prayer is telling is, it is only mentioned two things. What is it? May we hear what is good. May we see what is auspicious. But it, by implication, it also means all our five sense organs be purified. What does it mean? It means, what is it that we see the forms? Who is the Adhishtana Devata to see the forms? Fire. All the five elements. We are constituted of the five elements. These five elements came from whom? From God. Therefore, when we look upon the sun, the moon, the air, the water, the fire, and the earth as manifestations of God, and because everything has come out of these five elements, then whatever we see is nothing but ultimately God. May we have that elevated vision of seeing that truth every waking moment of our life. If we can do that, the purpose of our life is fulfilled. Why do we worship you? Because when we worship you, we will be able to see God. Worship means what? Do you know what is the meaning of worship? To see God, that is called worship. Then my life will be fulfilled. Your life will be fulfilled. That is a spiritual value. So this is the first thing, is may I have a good body, healthy body. May I have a good mind, healthy mind, strong mind. And with this body and mind, may I worship you. Means may I see God in everything by thy grace. Let me do my best with your grace, and may you also bestow your grace so that I can reach my ultimate goal. This is the prayer, is the first spiritual value. What is it? Prayer. A humble, sincere prayer. O Lord, please make me an instrument. Let me, lead me to you. This is the first value in life. This is what Sri Ramakrishna had taught as the first value. Only he used a different word. What is the word he used? Sharanagata, Sharanagata, Sharanagata. Surrender, surrender, surrender. When you surrender, then you see God everywhere and nothing else. This is the first value. I would say this is also the last value. But I am going to continue the classes in future also. So we will discuss some important values which we will have to have in my next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.